Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and I'm here with my host, Stone Payton.
Good morning, sir.
Another gorgeous day here in Hotlanta.
Yeah, I mean, it's great weather this week. I'm loving it.
Well, people complain so much about the cold and the snow and the rain, and now people are kind of not talking about it. Everything's fine, and then, you know, within a month, they'll be complaining about it being too hot.
We have, like, this one-month window, right, where everybody's happy.
That's right. And you know it's going to get cold again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
know,
it's going to snow again one more time.
Yeah. Major cold snap coming.
It cannot snow for shamrocking. You know the shamrocking party.
Say more about shamrocking, because you've mentioned it, and I wrote it down somewhere, but we got to get on top of this thing, because I definitely want to be there.
You got to come. March 12th. Okay, March 12th, it is the St. Paddy's Day party to end all St. Paddy's Day parties. It is a lot of fun. It's at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, and there's going to be a band and all the booze you can drink, all the food you can eat, silent auction, live auction, heated tent in the orchestra pit if you've ever been to Verizon, and we party on the stage with the band. It's a very cool,
sweet,
unique experience. Yeah. So you got to come.
Well, I'll be there. Now, who are we raising money for? What's
this
the cost?
This is for cystic fibrosis. So all the proceeds go to benefit cystic fibrosis. And it's a little group of people that that I know real well that we've been doing this for, this is the third year. And it's just ballooned. Last year, we went crazy with it. It had about 400 people, raised about 50 grand. And
nice.
This year, we're expecting 1,000. And raising 100 grand is what our goal is. So,
well, and I bet you our engineer, Alan, he'll probably do match dollar for dollar anything we raise.
I think Alan's got the deep pockets, so I'm going to be hitting him up right after the show.
He's in real estate. I mean, those guys always make
it. These guys are making tons of money right now.
right?
Killing it. He's killing it. Well, we are excited about today's show. Biz Rocket Radio is our show where we have an opportunity to interview executives and business owners in the Atlanta area and learn about successes and challenges that they've had and have them pass that experience on to our listeners and really get to know them and their businesses a little bit better. Today, we've got our guest, Del Wynn, who's the president and CEO of Quest Tech International. And Del, I want to welcome you on.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Stone, for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here.
We appreciate your time and coming out and chatting with us a little bit. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about Quest Tech.
Well, Quest Tech's a consulting company that I formed. My background is telecommunications, oil and gas, and most recently military sales. And I'm also an attorney, which I don't really practice in Georgia, but I use it to leverage the savings I bring to my clients.
And you don't lead with it either, I see. No. You're tired of hearing the attorney jokes? Or
I've probably heard every one of them.
You notice he led with arms sales.
Over being an attorney.
Yeah. Weapons of destruction.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's got to be a good business to be in right now, I would imagine. That there's a lot of that going on.
Well, the militaries have money.
Yeah.
Nobody else does, but the militaries of all these foreign countries have cash, and they're willing to spend it.
Yeah. Now, has that been a big piece of your consulting business? Is people that are in that area, or what's hot right now in your business?
For the last couple of years, I worked for a company in Suwannee that was a military contract, military equipment supplier in virtual training equipment. Prior to that, it was almost purely telecommunications.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of telecom. Now, what kind of telecom companies have you been working with? What's their main area?
The one that I worked for the longest and enjoyed the most was a company that had a digital technology called TDMA, and they also had a broadband CDMA. It's a wireless technology which was fixed and could be used in third world countries to provide Bell telephone quality telecommunications virtually instantly. Once they got the equipment on location and the antennas were hooked up and powered up, then wirelessly they could provide excellent telecommunications for a range of almost 60 kilometers, 120 diameter from the antenna.
Wow. Now, I've heard that, like, the whole infrastructure of third world countries, or a lot of them, is primarily cell phones. I mean, they don't have a lot of landlines. Is that accurate? I don't know.
It is now, because what we experienced, the first country I really deployed this equipment in was India. During the Latur earthquake, which was, I believe, 1992, 1993, we had a portable unit, which we had shipped over on Indian Airlines, they shipped it over for free. And we got the communications equipment on location, and within 3 hours, our technicians had it up and running and provided rescue and recovery telecommunications to the area, because all the landlines were completely knocked out because of the earthquake. 50,000 people were killed in that, if you recall, wow, during that earthquake.
Wow. So there must be some major challenges in selling into foreign culture. And I bet you've been there, done that on a lot of fronts. What are some of the challenges in selling into a foreign culture, and how do you address them?
Well, I look at it as a personal challenge, and it's a lot of fun. You have to overcome the cultural differences. You have to overcome the language differences in some instances. Countries like India, most everybody, the business people, speak in English, and that's true in a lot of other countries. But if you do have some problems running into taxi cab drivers which don't speak English, and that creates a challenge.
A lot of hand gestures, and I want to go uptown.
Yeah, that's true.
So in your business, what is the biggest challenge you've had, maybe in the last couple of years, I would imagine, has been more difficult, like for many people, in finding new clients? I mean, what's the way that you're finding the clients that fit into the consulting business that you do?
Well, that is the main challenge, trying to find a client. You know, once I find them, I work sometimes with partners, but we can provide them an excellent service to take their product overseas. Product or service, but the challenge is finding clients. I've found that networking is probably the best. Yesterday, I was at a Department of Commerce sponsored meeting that had the ambassador from Singapore there, and the gentleman sitting to my right, he and I started talking, and he has a product which is used in the construction business, but they don't sell a lot overseas. They try, but they don't know how to do it effectively. So. Mm. I talked to him, and we'll probably get together shortly to see what we can do for him.
So tell us, if I'm a business owner out there, and I'm saying, I've been looking at going maybe internationally. What would be the person or the organization that would be ready for you and your business?
Oh, a company that has an excellent product, maybe revenue in the U.S. that are selling exclusively in the U.S. or have dabbled overseas. They're a little bit afraid of it because they don't have the staff, they don't have the experience. If they have a good product and a good service, they should look overseas, because there are certain ways and many ways to protect themselves against loss of technology and so forth, and increase their sales, their sales revenues exponentially sometimes.
Is that often their biggest concern, or the major source of trepidation about getting into an international market? They're scared that their IP, their intellectual property, is going to get stolen, or their technology going to get stolen?
That's one of the main concerns. The other main concerns is cost, but there are ways to protect against both. I found that if you get the right partner or the right agent overseas, and they're pre-qualified or they're vetted because of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act or under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, then you're dealing with somebody that's honorable and honest. You can use them to without worrying about at night that they're going to steal your technology. Also, dealing with a government company sometimes is a good protection, because they do not want to risk their own reputations or their careers, and because of any kind of stealing of the technology. But, I mean, it does happen, and you have to be concerned about it, and you have to be hire somebody like myself that can go through those waters and make sure you're operating safely. The second concern people have is the cost. Well, there's a lot of ways you can keep the cost down. I have found when I travel to Asia, if I buy my air tickets over in Thailand and use that as a base, I can travel to many of the countries from that as a base very cheaply. For example, if a U.S. company sends an executive or salesperson on a 4 or 5 country, let's say call it a tour, but a sales mission, and buys a ticket in Atlanta, they'll spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, using different airlines, making one-way trips. I'll give you an example. The last company I worked for, I took the president and the vice president of sales, who I worked under, to India. Their airfare was from Atlanta to Delhi, and it's all seasonal, but their airfare was about $8,500 business class from Atlanta to Delhi. Mine was $3,500 because
wow.
I bought my ticket in Thailand, and I was on my return flight to India. I went Atlanta, Seoul, Seoul, Bangkok, Bangkok, Delhi for business class for less than half of what they paid.
So there's little tricks of the trade to kind of get the expenses down where you can. I guess I was thinking airline tickets. Who cares? And then he throws out $8,500.
Oh, it's right, they're going up.
Just, you that's know, more than a radio host makes in a year, just in case you're wondering.
So with all the upheaval that's going on in the Middle East right now, as a topical situation, how does that impact your business?
Well, I've really not done much in the Middle East, to be honest. Most of my exposure and clients, I target this South Asia, including India, because those economies are growing. They're growing very, very fast. And they like American products over other type of products. Their own domestic products usually are lower quality, so they really appreciate the U.S. products.
What are the best kind of products that you've seen that have gained success and exposure and momentum on the international front?
Well, telecom's number one.
The chamois towel that guy talks about, I bet.
The snuggly?
The snuggy,
whatever it is.
No, and military products, I mean, I'm quite familiar with those because the countries have money. But they're a longer, hard sell because you have to get the government involved. Sometimes you have to go through a bid process and compete with foreign manufacturers. But I like to try to avoid all that and get the products positioned with the customer without having to go to any type of bid. And we were very successful in doing that in India with the last company.
So telecom, military stuff, any other, I mean, you know, the widget makers of the world, what kind of things might work well that you know, a small business that might hire you produces?
Well, any type of technology. These countries, they just jump over. I mean, we go through the technology curve where you have development and testing, like the cellular industry. You know, we went through all different types of problems, having to call from one phone to another, depending on where it was. But the countries in Asia, in particular, would buy the technology without having to develop it, and went to market very quickly, set the systems up. The other types of products, consumer products, I would say number one, and you know, don't ask me to list. I'm not that familiar with other types of products, just what I've been targeting.
Any services that are popular, or mainly it's a product area that you're focusing on?
Software development is one of them. Very cheaply done and very excellently done in countries. I prefer taking people to Thailand because I think it's a much safer place to do business than China. They have the expertise like the Indians do in developing software.
Well, and there's the spicy basil noodles. I mean, there's just a lot to be said for Thailand. So what kind of mistakes do organizations make that don't take advantage of, capitalize on expert counsel like yours and just try to go over there and try to wing it? What kind of mistakes do they make in your experience?
They try the shotgun approach. I mean, they'll be contacted by potential distributors or agents, and they'll say, oh, wow, we can make all this money over here. And well, they'll end up with about 6 to 10 distributors without knowing what they're doing, and all they're going to do, these distributors will catalog their equipment, tie them up on an exclusive or semi-exclusive basis, and then they're lost until the agreement expires. They really need to focus on the potential market, whatever country could use their equipment, where the competition is the least, or if there is competition on the abilities of their own product to outshine the competition.
What's been your favorite country to do business in? I mean, you mentioned Thailand.
Oh, I love Thailand. I mean, as you noticed when I walked in, I'm not the tallest person in the world. And the reason
he looks
I,
perfectly normal to me.
Stone,
I'm like 5 foot nothing, for those of you in Radio Land that don't know that.
And you know, I like it because everybody's my height over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you stop back and look, from a reality standpoint, that makes a big difference. If you're negotiating with somebody that's a foot taller than you are, there's an intimidation factor. And if you look eye to eye at somebody, then there's a little bit of a comfort value to that. And that's where I've been very successful in doing that.
And what about organizations, your clients that are kind of going through that process? Are there typically good places for them to go into to start with? Asia is obviously a large area that you've worked with. Is there other places besides Thailand that you'd say is a good place to start?
Well, countries where I think English is a prominent language, you've got the UK, you've got Singapore, a lot of the former British colonies, there's a comfort value there. Australia is a good market because it's a growing economy. I would start there, or depending on the product, I would urge the potential client to look at Asia, because with the GDPs increasing and the current Obama administration, if you're not aware, launched a national export initiative in January of this year. Mm. So the U.S. government is behind you to export, and will give you all the benefits that they have. The Department of Commerce and the embassies help quite a bit also.
Have you done any work with like manufacturing overseas, or making a connection between an organization that maybe produces something here, but they could actually create a manufacturing area or a facility either in India or China or someplace like that? Is that anything you're involved in?
Oh, absolutely. I've set up manufacturing operations in 7 countries. The last one was for the company that produced the virtual training equipment for the military. We were in the throes of signing a $200 million deal with an Indian manufacturer. The Indians produced their weapons locally, and this company converted a small arms weapon, like a rifle or pistol, to a simulator, putting pneumatics inside and a laser in the barrel. And the Indians would not let their rifles and their pistols, because they were locally manufactured, out of the country. So that necessitated having them converted to the simulators in country. And we had to locate, with a partner of mine, we located a manufacturer that was owned by the Department of Defense. And the chairman of the company estimated it was a $200 million deal over the next 3 years.
Ah, that's great. So you are the international man of mystery. You carry two phones
two
with
phones.
You at all time. You know, this, albeit small, they are, you know, you got all the different gadgets, and you understand how to communicate through the web and Google Talk and all this other stuff. Tell us, as an example, maybe a story of your international travels and something that you found that was most surprising to you in all these travels that you do.
Well, that's easy. The one time I flew to India and had a business meeting scheduled for 8 o'clock the next morning. Of course, all the international flights arrive between about 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. And by the time I got to my hotel, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was dead tired after traveling for 24 hours plus, and I heard this clanging in the room above me, and I didn't know what it was, thought it would go away. Maybe somebody's repairing. It sounded like somebody was repairing the sink, you know, the drain underneath the sink, and it didn't go away. It kept clanging, and I called down to the front desk, and they said, oh, we'll check on it right away, sir, you know. 20 minutes later, somebody knocked at the door and says, well, there's no room above you. I'm going, whoa, wait a second, what was?
So Spider-Man's trying to get in my room, trying to come through the door.
Yeah, and I figured out, you know. Anyway, we walked into the bathroom, and lo and behold, there was a rat in a trap up above the fluorescent light. And the clanging was the rat trying to chew itself out of the cage,
oh,
right?
Nice.
But you know, rest assured, the gentleman said, well, don't worry, Mr. Wynn, we're going to move you. So where'd they move me? Two doors down on the same floor, as if this guy didn't have relatives and friends, right? Close by. Well, that was one experience. I have many of them, don't worry.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine. How many miles do you book a year? I would imagine it's just crazy.
Well, last year was kind of slow, but the year before that, I made 5 trips overseas. The year before that, about 10 or 12, as I recall. Just made 2 million miler on Delta. That's not the credit card miles. That's the actual flown miles. So, and people, you have to put that in perspective. I travel a lot. There's no question about that. And to go from 1 million miler to 2 million miler under the Delta Sky Miles program, or Sky Team program, took 13 years.
Wow.
So that's a lot of air miles.
That's a lot of air miles. You can have it. How about you? You want to travel?
He can absolutely. My wife's a little bit of a road warrior. Yeah. I'm a homebody.
Yeah,
I'd rather tie the kid's shoes and run them to school and empty the dishwasher, and God love her, let her go do that.
Mr. Mom.
That's right.
That's right.
Now, I love to fly. That's why I enjoy it so much.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I was listening to a speaker last Friday, and you may have been at the meeting, where they were talking about actually doing a flight to... Was it China?
No, Japan.
Japan. He was traveling to Japan. He flew out on a Thursday. He came back on a Sunday, and he stayed in the hotel while he was there. And he did it only just to get the miles, because he got like triple miles for that flight.
Good Lord.
Yeah, actually, we're going to have this guy on the show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
cool.
He's great. He does random marketing, basically random networking, where he can be in a bathroom and network with a guy and meet him.
That'll be a fun conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to hear more about this Kettering group, because you're a member of this. It's how you guys connected it,
yeah.
I think. We had Friday afternoon, you may not know this, on Accelerator Avenue. We had a guy in the Kettering group that I think Dell recognized, Narcy.
Yeah, Narcy.
And so these guys have a real presence in the Atlanta market. Do you guys mind just giving me a little bit of a feel for what that outfit's all about?
Well, Kettering, the full name is Kettering Executive Network, and it's a network of C-level and professionals which are there to, what we say, pay it forward. I mean, you're a part of a group, and the objective of the group is to help others, and you know, hopefully they'll help you if you're in a transition position or not. But as opposed to a lot of the local church networking groups, which are always excellently run and excellent speakers, but you're dealing with the Kettering group at a different level. People that you have a lot of in common. Some of them were presidents of companies. One fellow was on the board of General Motors. So I mean, it's a high level networking group, which is kind of a privilege to be part of, because you are vetted. You have to meet certain qualifications, and even after you meet the qualifications, you have to be interviewed by one or two people and approved for membership.
So basically, somebody like me has to have their own radio show if they hope to meet any of these people. They're not going to let me in the club.
No, that's a great group of people.
That sounds like it.
I got involved in it about 5 years ago doing workshops there, training sessions, and just really quality people. Very, very impressive. So that's how I met Dell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we try to meet every Friday morning, and except for holidays and so forth.
Yeah. Well, good. And we're going to get a chance to visit with some more folks.
Yeah.
From
yeah, absolutely. Cool. You know, Dell, I had one other question, and it was interesting in reading your bio. And I knew you were an attorney before I actually invited you to come on, which is, you know, good by me, right?
That's right. Nicely done.
But you're kind of an ex-attorney almost. You know, you did public defense, and then you went into sales. I mean, how is that transition? I mean, that seems like almost night and day.
That's true, but I was asked that very question, and the answer is, what does a lawyer do in front of a jury? He's a salesman for
right.
his client.
Yeah.
And if you have a good personality and you enjoy what you're doing, then it's an easy transition, because sales and business development, it's all semantics. It's the same thing, and I enjoy it. But you know, the legal background is also a help, because if I'm a 12-hour time difference from Atlanta and need to draft an agreement or to give an answer to somebody that I'm negotiating with, then I know the answer. And if the my client or my company, whichever the case, backs me up, then we can conclude the deal, especially in if it's a highly competitive environment where the deal has to be signed before I come back. So it has been an advantage many, many times.
And when you were in the public defense area, you were doing a lot of courtroom stuff, or was it mainly behind the scenes?
No, I was my last semester in law school, I was under a LEAA grant, which doesn't exist anymore, but law enforcement, I don't even forget what exactly it means. But I was assigned to an attorney to be a public defender under him, a local practicing attorney. This was in Clarksdale, Mississippi. But after the first day I met him, I never saw him again. So I was pretty much on my own.
That was it, huh? Well, good luck, kid.
Yeah, he said, exactly. You know, you just take the burden off of me now. So, but I defended about 60, 70 cases over a period of a month or two, maybe 3 months.
I'm keeping his card. I'm calling him at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm in, you know, Op Alabama.
Alan may want to get that card too.
We'll get Alan.
I had a very, if we have the time, I had a real funny experience as a public defender. I had a client who was a painter. He was, painters are notoriously, at least they were, maybe still are, in that area. And sorry, all painters listening in, alcoholics. and no offense to any painters listening in.
There goes our Sherwin Williams sponsorship.
Anyway, I came into the jail on a Monday morning, and because of, you know, Clarksdale is in the mid-south, deep south, it wasn't too difficult to find a white face behind bars, right? And he came up to me and said, "Oh, can I speak to you?" So sure. So I took him out. And what had happened was, you know, he had finished a house, had been paid in cash. He bought a bottle and just proceeded to get inebriated. And this was on a Saturday night. And Sunday morning, he was arrested, kind of walking and holding on from telephone to telephone pole. And, you know, his charge was public drunkenness. So when the trial came up a couple days later, he had to stay in jail until that time because he couldn't post bail. I got the arresting officer on the stand, and I said, "Well, Officer so-and-so, would you describe the events of the arrest?" He said, "Oh, yes, my partner and I, we were on a routine check of the neighborhood and saw this gentleman, you know, hanging on from one telephone pole to the other, and he was obviously drunk. I gave him the sobriety test, and he failed miserably, so we hauled him off to jail." I said, "Well, besides yourself, who witnessed the arrest?" He says, "Well, my partner was in the car. He called in the arrest, and that was our procedure." And I said, "Were there no one else witnesses?" And he said, "No." So I turned to the judge. I said, "Your Honor, I move to dismiss." And the judge, you know, and this was kind of it was JP Court, Justice of the Peace Court, and there was a lot of discourse between the attorneys and the judge. And he says, well, why, counselor? I said, "Well, Your Honor," and I pulled out the statute book, and I said, "My client is charged with public drunkenness, and two policemen who just testified there were no other witnesses do not constitute the public." And the judge kind of looked at me and cocked his
face.
Cocked his face and says, "You know, you're right. Case dismissed."
Wow.
That's great.
The painter is free to go.
Well, he was back in there
another day. Yeah, he's back in there next week.
Well, 2 weeks later.
That's a great story. That's creative. That's using your noggin.
Yeah, so I would imagine that kind of creativity comes in pretty well when you're overseas trying to negotiate deals, right?
Yeah, you have to be. I mean, a good lawyer will find ways to get the deal done, not ways to kill it. And that's how I differ from a lot of my fellow attorneys.
Good. Great stuff. So the last question I have is kind of centered around passing on, kind of that Kettering concept of paying it forward. If you are coming across or talking to somebody who's trying to get into the international business and be successful, what would your one, let's say, pearl of wisdom be to them to help them be successful?
Well, international business is a big spectrum. I would say, you know, network a lot if you want to do it, and have a good sense of humor, because you're going to have a lot of problems. I mean, people think it's all glamorous flying on airplanes, especially long trips. Like the longest trip I ever took was 17 hours and 5 minutes. That's a long time on
an
airplane.
That's a long time.
But, you know, you have to have a humor about it and be prepared to have rats in your bathroom and other problems that you will encounter overseas. And if you can stand all that and enjoy meeting people, too. I mean, I have more friends in Bangkok than I have in Atlanta. And I define a friend as somebody you can call up on a Saturday afternoon and help you move furniture and tell them they're not going to get any beer until after the furniture's moved. Right? So... I enjoy it and I love it and that's what I do.
Well, good. Well, it's been great to have you in, Del. We appreciate your time. And if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Give me a phone call. I have a Google Voice number which you can reach me. It's 62020 Global. That's, believe it or not, it's a Kansas number. But or you can call me locally, which is on my cell phone. 404-414-4222. It's easy to remember.
All right. Well, we appreciate it there, Del, and hopefully your travels this year go well, and we enjoyed having you.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure being here.
Okay. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.